Coming up later in the hour, a look at wildfire and forest health. And how's your health? This week in the Magic Valley and the Treasure Valley, residents have experienced smoky skies. Has that changed your outdoors routine? I'll be happy to share your comments later in the show. Just go to Twitter and use the hashtag Idaho Matters. But first, the Friday Reporter Roundtable, where our media panelists get us updated on Idaho headlines. Today, our panel includes Bill Manny with the Idaho Statesman, Kevin Richard with Idaho Education News, and Betsy Russell with the Idaho Press. Welcome to the show.
Thanks for having us.
Thank you.
So let's look at what happened this week. Every once in a while, an FBI might sweep into a community and announce a number of indictments. Bill, this happened here. 16 Treasure Valley residents faced charges of drug trafficking and money laundering after FBI raids. And this was odd. It was a case about fake cell phones?
Fake cell phones and more. And I, you know, we were talking earlier, and sometimes raids like this feel like old hat. But I don't think in Boise. I think when you have the FBI staging outside of 12 homes and businesses and kind of almost in real time under media coverage, it creates quite a stir. And I think a lot of people got interested this time around. What's interesting is how unusual it is. You're talking about allegations against what appears to be a family of people who'd come here from Georgia or
the Republic of Georgia,
connected to the Eastern European nation. Yes, involved in the Morning Star Church, and accused of selling phones and illegally. And so it's not your typical FBI raid where people sweep in and collect drugs or guns.
Sir? The one odd thing about it was that the U.S. attorney, at the same time that he announced the indictments in this phone counterfeiting scheme, also announced separately indictments of six people in a drug ring. And the U.S. attorney, Bart Davis, said he didn't know that they were connected in any way. They were just announcing them at the same time. They also, the people who were indicted in the drug ring also had Russian-sounding names. It was just kind of odd that those two things came together.
Yeah, the whole thing's been kind of odd. The other twist of this is not the first time some of these people have been accused of some of these things. There were previous complaints and suits 10 or 12 years ago involving Virgin Mobile and track phones. So, in one way, it's not new. In another way, it just seems to have come out of left field.
You know, in national news, Bill, Betsy, and Kevin, there's a lot of talk on national campaign finance violations. But here in Idaho, too, a recent emphasis on campaign finance reform. And Kevin, let's talk about campaign finance reform committee. What happened recently with some of our candidates?
Well, we've had a spate of candidates failing to submit their paperwork in time, failing to submit their campaign finance reports in a timely manner. We had several and two very high-profile Republican candidates miss their deadline in June. You had State Superintendent Shuri Ibarra and the Republican nominee for Lieutenant Governor, Janice McGeehan, both missed the June 15th deadline. They both turned in their paperwork. I think it was 4 days late in both cases, and could have been subject to fines of $50 a day. But Secretary of State Lawrence Denny, who's also a Republican like Ibarra and McGeehan, waived the fines for those two candidates. But a couple of Democrats have been fined for missing deadlines.
Well, there's been a national debate on whether this is a big deal. Well, certainly it happens here locally.
Yeah, and under our law, basically fining people who don't comply with those deadlines, who file late or don't file at all, is at the discretion of the Secretary of State. And so the Secretary of State, Lawrence Denny, came to a legislative committee that's looking at some very major campaign finance reform legislation and said, I don't want that discretion. I don't relish, you know, fining one person and not fining another. He actually told that legislative committee that as a result of that feeling, when he first came into office, he didn't fine anybody. And a legislative audit called him on it and said, you're not complying with the code. So he established a policy of sending a warning letter. And if they haven't responded after the warning letter, then and only then imposing the $50 a day fine, which essentially built in a 5-day grace period for everybody. That's not really in the law. And so the legislators were very clear that they want a crackdown. When people don't comply, they want them fined, and they want them fined right away. And they do plan to propose legislation to the full legislature in January to accomplish that.
Bill.
Well, you know, this goes beyond just whether a fine is a smart or fair thing to do. You know, this is basic public accountability, and we've talked about it on this show before. In the spring primary, that we were making decisions as voters on issues we really weren't well informed on. We didn't know the full extent of campaign financing until either the moments right before the election or until after the election.
And the same thing happens in the fall. We'll be waiting for numbers until the latter stages of the campaign.
And in fact, right now, all the campaigning that's going on this summer, we have no idea who's behind it, who's underwriting it until the October 10th report comes.
So if we're going to have this law requiring people to disclose this, let's get it in time to make a smart decision. And the fact this committee is recommending some better financing deadlines, are they not, so that
Absolutely.
We won't be in this boat.
And at this meeting, they were leaning very strongly toward requiring monthly reporting from the start of the election cycle before the primary all the way through the general election day. Now, the question is, will the full legislature go along with it? But it sure sounded like this bipartisan committee of senators and representatives was on board with that idea. I believe there was one no vote from Representative Tom Lurcher, and he lost in the primary. He's not coming back.
Right.
Well, speaking of school, let's stay there. And there is voting coming up as early as Tuesday. But I wanted to first talk about Boise School Board election. Kevin, maybe this is getting, might I use the word, nasty?
It is getting to be a little bit heated. And I think it's interesting because these are elections that don't get a lot of attention. I mean, look outside. It's summer. It's smoky. But it is election season. The Boise School Board will have elections the Tuesday after Labor Day. They're the only government body in the state that has an election that day.
September the 4th,
when everybody's really thinking about voting, right? but this has become a little bit more of a high-profile campaign. Boise School Board, usually kind of a snoozer of an election. A lot of chatter in traditional media and social media circles especially, and it's all kind of centered around Brandon Durst, a former legislator who's moved back to Boise and is running for school board.
Brandon Durst, Bill, do you want to jump in as well? You had a story in The Statesman about this. The Statesman had a story. Can you add to this?
Well, when he left Idaho and went to Washington State, it emerged that he had either made threats or verbal threats, at least against a spouse or a partner.
Ex-wife,
right. And so that's kind of dogged him in both his interest in a Washington State election as well as potential school district election. And I mean, it seems odd to me that he would subject himself to this knowing that it was going to be under such scrutiny. But, you know, he's a guy who kind of seeks out conflict and or controversy and doesn't shy away from it. And both Kevin and I know that, in our roles with the Statesman editorial page, he was not happy with some of our coverage as well.
Right. It's fair to say and important to note that he's been a pretty vocal opponent of my entity since the get-go.
You're tuning into Idaho Matters. We're speaking with Betsy Russell from the Idaho Press, Kevin Richard with Idaho Education News, and Bill Manny of the Idaho Statesman. Betsy, one more thing on this. Why September the 4th? There is a law. So we're going to get in the weeds here. There is a law about certain dates you can hold an election in Idaho.
And that's not one of them. So the Idaho Press had an interesting story this week from reporter Xavier Ward about this. The Boise School District is what's called a charter school district. It was actually created before statehood, and its charter was approved by the territorial legislature back in 1881. Now, that charter requires the Boise School District to hold its election on September 4th. And so that's what they have to do, although no other government entity in the state still does so. They could conceivably try to amend their charter. They haven't had real high turnout in those elections. On the other hand, the other provisions of that charter allow them to have better funding, essentially, than any other school district in the state from property taxes. And that's certainly not something that either the district or its patrons would want to see compromised.
This has been an issue as long as I've been in Idaho and in Boise, and I think the school district just liked having its own little niche. I think it's become enough of an issue that if they could change it, they probably would. But reopening that charter would be such a kettle of worms, kettle of fish.
And can of worms.
It'd be a can of fish for the Boise School District, and I don't think anybody's interested in going there. But the notion of having an election after the Labor Day is nobody's idea of a good day to get people involved in decision making.
Kevin.
And meanwhile, you've also got a bunch of other school elections coming up on Tuesday, a bunch of bond issues and supplemental levies, 11 in all, totaling $207 million of ballot measures. And you've got some right here in the Treasure Valley. You've got Middleton is going for a fairly sizable bond issue. You've got proposals in Parma and Wilder. And about a $99 million bond issue in Idaho Falls. So it's another, it's an important election day in those districts that that have questions on the ballot.
In the final minute, Kevin, those bonds and levies in other areas were successful in the last election for schools. What do you think will happen at these 11 districts?
Well, two of the bond issues that you've got on Tuesday are essentially repeats. Idaho Falls District has been looking to replace and renovate high schools. And, true story, when my wife and I first got married, we lived across the street from Idaho Falls High School, and it was kind of old then, and, we're an old married couple. It probably needs some renovation. They failed to get a bond issue passed in November. They're trying again at a slightly lower amount. Middleton is trying again as well. They had failed to get that two-thirds majority in March, so they're back before the voters on Tuesday.
We're back with the second half of our reporter roundtable. With us, Bill Manny with the Idaho Statesman, Kevin Richard with Idaho Education News, and Betsy Russell with the Idaho Press. Well, it's no secret that folks here in Idaho enjoy their outdoor living. 15 new trails proposed for the foothills. There's something called the Boise August Trails Challenge going on right now. And this week, the Land Board and the Fish and Game Commission endorsed a new agreement between two state agencies covering more than 2 million acres of state lands. Betsy, perhaps you could talk about why this is somewhat historic.
Sure. Now, traditionally, Idaho's state endowment lands, and there are about 2.4 million acres of them, have all been, where possible, open to hunting and fishing and other dispersed recreation. But there's been no guarantee that they would stay that way. And in fact, the state constitution requires the land board to manage the endowment lands for the maximum long-term returns to the beneficiaries, which are the largest of which is the public schools. So it's become harder and harder to justify, as recreation use has increased on state lands, that there's no income stream for the endowment from those. And the land board has received requests over the years, including a pretty major one back in 2015, from private parties, very wealthy people with deep pockets, who want to come in and lease out a big chunk of state endowment lands for their own private hunting clubs and keep the public out.
In fact, we're seeing access issues on area roads throughout the state, not just our engineering department here at Boise State Public Radio, but others.
Sure. And the state has never allowed that on endowment lands, but they were worried that they could be challenged. And also at the same time, as you mentioned, access in Idaho is changing everywhere. More and more private lands are being posted. More and more people are turning to those state lands to go hunting, fishing, berry picking, hiking, things like that. So this agreement between Fish and Game and the State Department of Lands says that Fish and Game will pay the State Department of Lands 25 cents an acre for every acre that's open to public dispersed recreation. And right now, that's 96% of the endowment.
That's going to be some revenue.
2.3 million acres. It's going to be, it comes to a little over 500,000, but part of that will be per year, but part of that will be offset by Fish and Game also providing conservation officers to patrol those lands. And they are full peace officers, police officers, which lands doesn't have. It allows essentially the land board to justify the policy that Idaho has always had of keeping those lands open for hunting and fishing and recreation. And when the next rich person comes in and says they want to keep the public out and the state can make more money that way, they have a pretty good argument to say no.
Well, let's stay with outside lands. And Bill, there are many ways to enjoy our lands, cherry picking, hunting, fishing, hiking, biking too. And let's go back to the capital city. There are bikes that are locked to a station and there are bikes that can be left along the streets. Currently in Boise, there's something called Boise Green Bike. Now the city of Boise has some new rules about other bike sharing services that want to come to town. Will they let them?
Right. Well, it looks like they will. Sven Berg has written about this for the Statesman. Right now we have Boise Green Bike that has that has what they call docking bikes, and you can check them out on an app, ride them to another dock, check them back in, but they have to be at one of those stations. There's this new movement around the country called dockless bikes, and some of the companies are Lime, which used to be Lime Bike, Razor, Spin, and you don't have to dock them. You can lock them up and park them wherever you finish your ride. So it's really convenient, but in some of the places, some of the cities where they exist now, they have become either sidewalk clutter, there are obstacles at like outside of stadiums. So there's this controversy over where you can put them. So the city decided that try to get ahead of the curve and work with these companies to write regulations that would control that.
And they're dipping a toe into this by allowing a limited number of these.
Correct. And the rules would allow for, I think, up to, if I remember right, 750 total dockless bikes. You couldn't start a service unless you had at least 50, but not more than 250 bikes or scooters or e-bikes, actually. So, you know, to give the city credit, they're thinking ahead and trying to accommodate the demand while also addressing concerns about cluttering up our sidewalks.
Well, this is our Friday Reporter Roundtable, and one of the issues of this week was back to school for many area public and private schools. And another issue that we'll be talking about on Monday's program is the issue of immunization rates. It's a topic of the program on Monday. If you have comments about it, you can tweet us at KBSX915 or send us an email, idahomatters@boisestate.edu. Kevin Richard with Idaho Education News also covered immunization. Some schools are struggling with this issue.
Well, when I looked at the numbers for the past school year, what I found is that you've got more parents than ever opting their kids out of immunizations, some or all of the immunizations that the state recommends for kids. That number is going up, and it's been one of the highest opt-out rates in the country for a long time. And what I also found along the way is that for this coming school year, it's going to be even easier. The rules are going to be even more lax. Parents won't even need to fill out a form with the state to opt out. All they will need to do is submit a letter. It's too early to tell what that's going to do in terms of immunization rates or immunization opt-out rates. I talked to a nurse in Boundary County, which has high opt-out rates. She's concerned. She hasn't seen much of a difference yet, but she's concerned that it's going to lead to more parents opting out of immunizations.
Betsy.
Well, Idaho is currently seeing an outbreak of whooping cough in southwestern Idaho, and this has been an issue. We've seen a number of these over the years, and as our immunization rates fall, there's more risk, particularly to babies who are too young to be immunized, and they can die from this.
And that's really the only time when a school can act. When there is an outbreak, they can keep kids out of school if they aren't immunized or if their immunization records are incomplete. But until then, the schools really are basically powerless.
You know, I was going to ask Kevin, is it Idaho has this, you know, sense of independence. Idaho is skeptical of government, skeptical of being told by any governmental agency what they could do. There's also a fairly strong kind of faith component in our state. Is there any sense for which of these issues is driving us to be such high lack of compliance state?
I think that you kind of hit the nail on the head there. That's got a lot to do with that independence, that skepticism. And it really puts health and welfare in a bind. The department, the agency, would much prefer to see kids fully immunized and would like to see higher immunization rates. But they also have to respect that the law gives parents pretty wide latitude to opt out.
Well, we'll be diving into this issue on Monday's edition of Idaho Matters. We thought we'd stay on the education point, Kevin, and you wrote about a six-figure payout, retirement payout at the Bonneville School Board. This always raises the hackles and when they hear about these things. Tell us the details of the case and the reaction.
It was a very interesting little development in the Bonneville School District in eastern Idaho. Superintendent Chuck Shackett is retiring. There'd been some tension. There'd been some clashes between Shackett and the school board. Long story short, he will receive a $200,000-ish payout. The exact figure hasn't been made final. To get his full retirement benefits, the district is going to add money to his fund, a payout that could be in the neighborhood of $200,000. did it very quietly. It happened sort of as a consent calendar item on their school board agenda, which is usually a place where very routine matters are covered. It's a pretty big payout.
Closing, go ahead, Bill.
I was just going to say, you know, Kevin's organization did a really good job of kind of teasing out the information, because this was handled in a non-public setting, and they got the records and forced this disclosure. But what was really disturbing, you know, should be disturbing for all of us who are interested in government transparency, is this board was willing to handle this kind of behind the scenes and out of the public eye, and really resisted revealing what had really happened.
And the details just sort of trickled out. At first, it sounded like it was about a $25,000 payout. Then we got the documents like, well, it's actually could be eight times as large.
And the news comes out. Thank you for your reporting on that. Thought we'd end with a favorite topic of conversation. Beer, especially here in Boise. There's a national study about that no drinking is actually the best route for folks. But we're actually seeing, is this true, Bill, a decline in sales in Boise's big breweries?
So Michael Dietz has a story that's running in Sunday Statesman, and it's online now, where he looks at the biggest breweries in the valley in Idaho, which are Sockeye and Payette. Sockeye is actually down 6% from last year, but Payette is down even more. And so Sockeye has become the largest brewery in the state, not because it's growing, but because it's shrinking less quickly than Payette. What Michael finds, and it's really interesting, is there's so much craft beer competing for all of our interests that we're not buying as much as going to our local tap rooms and getting our local brews.
Well, I would like to thank you, Bill Manny with the Idaho Statesman. Also you, Betsy Russell with the Idaho Press, and Kevin Richard with Idaho Education News. But before we go to the break, a cultural touchstone here. This is the last weekend for the Western Idaho State Fair, and our reporter James Dawson dropped by and captured these sounds from the fair. First, judging a 4-H pig competition.
This next gilt coming out is gilt you just certainly have to appreciate for extreme amount of muscle thickness, and she's very big boned. She is gilt that I wish was just a hair taller, a little bit sounder. She's extremely weak on those front pasterns, and she tends to move a little bit weird with her rear legs, and I'd like to change that about this gilt. Good class, thank you.
So that wasn't maybe the best pig that walked in front of that judge, but I'd like to share this too from James Dawson, our reporter here. Lieutenant Governor Brad Little watching mechanical bull riding and providing a play-by-play narration.
Oh, well, at least he got on all right. Those shoes aren't very good bull riding shoes, but that's all right. But he better put his tongue back in his mouth. Oh, he recovered. No.
An impressive ride, and that is scenes from the Western Idaho State Fair. Again, that wraps up this weekend.